We present the news quiz with your chairman, Simon Hoggart.
Hello and welcome again to the news quiz. We start with a clipping from the Ross Shire Journal, read by Brian Perkins.
Police pursuing a speeding car were stunned when a motorcyclist flashed past them and shot across a humpback bride at more than 100 miles an hour.
Thanks to Mary Jones of Dingwall for that. Let's meet the teams now. Please welcome first, on my right, Andy Hamilton and Jeremy Hardy. We're facing them on my left, Alan Corran and Tony Hawkes. Andy, whose West African visit wasn't so much booked as cooked.
This is this riveting story about Sierra Leone. And the government's been accused of shifting its position this week. Broadly speaking, its position started off as we knew nothing about it. Then their position shifted to we might have known a little bit about it. Then it went to we might have known about it, but it was all right because we were on the right side anyway. And then it went to, all right, do you want to step outside and have a fight about it? But it has afforded us the high comedy of people like Michael Howard and Malcolm Rifkin standing up and complaining about the government breaking UN embargoes. And I saw Malcolm Rifkin attacking the government for its incompetence because, of course, he knew how to do it properly. But it's also given us the sight of Robin Cook getting aggressive, which when you're small and ginger is a mistake, really, isn't it? It's quite a lovely oldie-worldie story because I love the fact that our man in Africa is called Penfold. It's got a lovely sort of grain-greenish feel about it.
It's great that the language they come out with, though, because one of a senior civil servant, I think he was saying that Tony Lloyd, I think the minister, was briefed, but not in a prominent way. What does that mean, not in a prominent way? Did he have the music on loud, you know? Was he doing air guitar in the mirror while he was being told about it?
But the same civil servant said that Robin Cook always went very deeply into his briefs. And anyone else's? Yes, the question concerned Robin Cook denying allegations that the Foreign Office encouraged Sandline International's involvement in a coup in Sierra Leone.
It's a strange name for a company that does. You imagine they're in beach balls and inflatable walruses, occasional potted shrimps. Want killers or guns are us. Sandline.
Jeremy, who cashed in on our very own gong show?
Francis Pym. Is he a lord now, is he? Yeah. Rather extraordinary. He says it's all right to bung politicians' money so that you can become a peer or get a knighthood or something. And he said that people who support politicians should put their money where their mouth is, which I'm sure Bill Clinton would be doubly pleased.
Yes, it was Lord Pym, the former cabinet minister and chairman of the Political Honours Scrutiny Committee, who said that donating money to a party was a plus rather than a minus when considering awards. Following these comments, Tony Blair sought to reassure the public that under Labour, honours could no longer be bought before he went off to dinner with Sir Bernie Ecclestone at Lord Murdoch's place. 2 points to Jeremy. Tony, whose explosive policy mushroomed into an international crisis?
India. Basically, they thought they'd have their test series all of their own this year. And they kind of, what was it? They sort of just went out and, as you do, tested a couple of nuclear things underground, and there was a world outrage. They couldn't believe it. Everyone was withdrawing dollars of aid to them or whatever. And they were so hurt by this that they went out the next day and tested three more, I think. I don't know. How can you sort of berate these people for having these things? Because we've got them, haven't we? Haven't we?
This is not the moral maze.
Yeah, well...
The headline in the Daily Mail on Tuesday said, Indians have H-bomb. I thought, Christ, he's going to upset the cowboys. And sure enough, next day... after that, Reagan withdrew the beads and the wampum and all the good... the fire water.
I don't see the point, though. It's very futile for a Hindu state to have an atomic bomb, isn't it? Because there's an obvious defence, which is you just surround your cities with cows. They can't bomb you. They commit sacrilege, don't they? Pakistan will be doing that next week.
What a grasp of comparative theology the man.
Blair has put India at the top of the agenda for this weekend's summit meeting of G8 in Birmingham. This is when the leaders of the richest countries in the world sit around a table and say to Boris Yeltsin, "What are you doing here?" Alan, your piece of music. Born through a party in the county jail. The prison band was there, they began to wail. The band was jumping and the joint began to swing. You should have heard this knocked out jailbird sing that rock. Alan, why will the joint be jumping once again if you're banged up?
Is this a joke about joint?
It is.
Cannabis is going to be green. I couldn't really understand why it was designated green, but there's a big sheet that all screws have, which is what you can and can't do, and cannabis is moved into the green area. You can't have heroin, you can't have crack cocaine, and you can't have Mars bars. But cannabis will be not as frowned upon as it was.
Because it keeps people mellow, supposedly, and so the screws think it keeps the prisoners down, but the trouble is with dope is it also makes people paranoid. So all the prisoners are going, "Oh, I think those cameras are watching us." And say, "Oh, they are, they are." So I reckon someone's reading the letters, man. Well, they are, it's a prison.
I can't think why you want to take it, because in the days, long time ago now, discharged my debt to society, when I smoked it, it just dragged time out. You know, half an hour went on for 3 days, and I thought, God, if I was doing 7 years, the last thing I'd want to do is smoke pot. But there we are.
Do you mean that you have broken the laws of England, Alan?
Yes, I.
I am shocked and appalled.
And complicit, I would think.
The government announced it would relax penalties for prisoners caught smoking cannabis. The governor of Wormwood Scrubs has welcomed the news as he began his new 3-year rolling contract. And the scores at the end of round one are, everybody, 4 points. And we start round two with a piece from The Scotsman.
In A Scottish Childhood, a collection of anecdotes on behalf of Save the Children, Anne Mackenzie recalls that on the neighbouring croft on Lewis, the family had 2 sons, both called Murdo. There was no confusion. They were named after 2 different Murdos.
Thank you to Mrs. C. Schooler of Kent for that one. Andy, which is the only European institution that always provides harmony?
Is this anything to do with Gianfranco Zola's thrilling goal in the victory of the Super Blues in Scotland?
No.
Well, I won't have seen it then.
Is it Dana International?
It's
the big singing bloke. It's the mezzo contralto that Israel's fronted up. It's not even in Europe. It's all the whole thing shifty. Is it this?
I think she's a woman now, but she was a man. Or something in between, I can't remember which. And it's caused a lot of outrage in among the fundamentalist Jewish community in Israel. And they're saying, you know, it'll bring down dreadful plagues and pestilences of frogs. And, of course, well, it will bring down a plague and pestilence because they get the Eurovision Song Contest next year.
The voting is incredibly political as well. I mean, it's kind of things like the Scandinavian countries all gave each other points, and then Greece always gives Cyprus 10 points, Cyprus gives Greek 10 points. Nobody gives Switzerland any points because they all hate Switzerland because it's too tidy. But I think it'd be great if we actually decide all European issues for once by the Eurovision Song Contest. 1 year. Just, you know, if Greece beat Turkey, they get Cyprus. You know, on the strength of having a better song. And instead of having Cole and Chirac and Blair as the major power brokers in Europe, it's Tony Hatch and Jackie Trent.
Am I right in thinking her name is Dana, isn't it?
Dana International.
She wasn't born Dana International, she was born Moisha International.
Yeah. Amnesty, her first name.
is that a common surname, International?
It is,
right,
it is, I think, yeah, it is.
So well, they go past hotels and say that's named after me.
Very odd name, Dana, because many of us here will remember we're having Dana for dinner. Do you remember that commercial? It was chopped pork. I think this is something else to upset the rabbis. Dana was a spam equivalent. We'll have Dana for dinner. Dana makes a good meat meal. Doesn't anybody remember that?
The revelation that Dana was a transsexual caused consternation among Israeli religious groups who were particularly angry to see a Hebrew achieve success as a Shebrew. Jeremy, which bane of the fat cats will no longer have to look at the Queen?
This is... Andy's nodding at me.
Be quick, because he'll get in
again. It's Lord Irvine. Yes. Doesn't have to walk backwards anymore, so he won't have to look at the Queen's tatty old clothes. He's going to be able to turn and run. from her.
It's shameful. Shameful abandonment of tradition. I understand the practical difficulties in an elderly man walking backwards, but the answer was obvious, wasn't it? Fit him with wing mirrors. Obvious. Or someone behind him going, you're all right. Keep going. You're like, what?
Left hand down a bit.
Nearly hit Black Rod there. It's all right, mate.
Is everyone supposed to walk backwards from the Queen?
Mm-hmm.
She must think that the rest of the world is really weird. Everyone's just in reverse, and it's just her that's normal.
In a break from a 450-year-old tradition, the Lord Chancellor, Lord Irvine, will no longer have to mince backwards up the steps during the state opening of Parliament. Commentators explained the change by saying that Lord Irvine felt that all this bowing and scraping in the face of majesty was quite inappropriate, so the Queen will only need to curtsy next time she meets him. Tony, a piece of music for you.
Late last night, I heard the screen door slam, and a big yellow taxi took away my old man. Don't it always seem to go that you don't know what you've got till it's gone? You paid paradise, put up a parking lot.
Tony, which New Yorkers refuse to say hail to the chief?
Yellow taxis, of course, in New York. There was a bit of a strike, I believe. The mayor of New York, Mayor Giuliani, I think he decided that they had to, the New York taxi drivers had to do a special test, and then they didn't like this. They're outraged, in fact, so they all went on strike. He was suggesting absurd things, like they should do a driving test, or they should have to undergo drugs tests now and again so that they weren't completely off their heads when they were driving, and naturally they were appalled by this. They just don't... Honestly, I don't know whether you've ever been in New York taxis. They really don't know anything about the place or whatever. When I was in New York, I spent a week there, and I had a policy of asking every New York taxi driver how long they thought Manhattan Island was. And the answers ranged enormously from about half a mile to 52 miles. And, it's 13 and a half miles. There you go. But I didn't get one taxi driver. I didn't get even close to knowing it.
You must be the only passenger that bores the driver.
Sorry, I didn't mean that. I was fascinated throughout.
No, it was halfway throughout. It was good fun. Well, get in there first, I think. You know, start boring them before they have a chance to have a go at you. That's my policy.
Alan, who was barred on the point of far too many orders in the House of Commons?
Oh, there was a woman who was invited to Westminster to be shown round, and she had a few drinks and fell down. A large woman with a sort of fringe. In the Daily Express. Well, I suppose she wears it everywhere, but in the Daily Express she had a fringe. And she was invited to represent whatever women represent from wherever they come when they go to Westminster, and she represented this at Westminster.
Yes, it was Jan Bounds, a chicken factory shop steward from Hereford, who, after a few too many complimentary white wines on a visit to Westminster, swore at MPs, heckled John Redwood, then fell flat at the feet of the Treasury Chief Secretary. Defending her behaviour, Mrs. Bounds said she was speaking for chicken factory workers everywhere when she told Mr. Redwood to get plucked. Her excuse was that she'd gone to the visitors' gallery, but every time she did, some demented female in a wig kept shouting out, "Order, order!" And the scores at the end of round two are Andy and Jeremy 8, but Tony and Alan just in the lead with 9 points. And we start round three with an item spotted by Michael Callahan of Huddersfield in the Tanzania Guardian.
Our report on Saturday concerning an attempt on the world kissing record contained an error. We inadvertently transposed a caption from page 11, giving the impression that Pope John Paul was involved in the contest.
Thanks for that. Andy, why is the Bible now strictly for train spotters?
I've no idea, Jim. Do you have any other?
They're bringing out new editions of the Bible. Is Irvin Welsh doing one with lots of swearing? They've got lots of different people to write forwards, and they're bringing the Old Testament out in bits. Which is good, it's good, the Old Testament.
You could do the introduction to Leviticus.
I could do. I know lots about Leviticus. It's all about what you can't eat. That which hath no fins nor scales in the water shall be an abomination unto you. It says, which means you can't eat prawns. You can't eat Winkle's eye, but that's for different reasons.
A lot of it's about sandalwood.
Sandalwood?
Sandalwood, for art conversions. Yes, you can bolt on patio doors and things.
But yeah, they've got all these people like Will Self and, I don't know, Hanif Qureshi and I don't know, Agatha Christie and Enid Blyton to do introductions. No one reads introductions, do they?
What if Phil Collins is writing any introductions? That was a joke about Genesis, but it didn't work. sorry about that.
Jeremy, your piece of music.
Hit me with your rhythm stick. Hit me, hit me. Je t'adore, ich liebe dich. Hit me, hit me, hit me. Hit me with your rhythm stick. Hit me slowly, hit me quick. Hit me, hit me, hit.
Jeremy, whose holier-than-thou reputation received a jolly good spanking?
Oh, spanking is, according to Francis, who's not here, I was reading in Francis's column, Paul Johnson has been regularly spanked for 12 years, which should be of no surprise to anyone. I always think that Paul Johnson's column should have the words, Paul Johnson is unwell, printed underneath it at all times. But yeah, apparently, no, he's been under the firm hand of somebody for 12 years.
Yes, Daily Mail journalist Paul Johnson, best known for advocating family life and Christian morality, has admitted having an affair with journalist Gloria Stewart. She told the Daily Express Paul loved to have his bottom spanked. This blatant hypocrisy is sure to cause him great embarrassment and another pair of bright red cheeks. Tony, what's meeting with serious French resistance?
Statue of Winston Churchill. I think what happened was, there's a long time ago in London, they decided to put up a statue of de Gaulle, and they needed to raise £300,000 for from private funds to put this thing up. And so they appealed to people, and they managed to raise twice the amount they needed. And then, so this gave this British businessman who lives in France the idea of having a statue of Churchill in Paris. And they needed £200,000 from private funds. So he started going round, and he's been trying to get money for ages, and he's only managed to come up with £35,000. So they've just got enough for Churchill's cigar, I think. Which they'll just have a little statue of that in the curb, and it'll look a bit like a... Well, it'll look like a turd, won't it, really? which is what the French think of Churchill, in fact, really.
Interesting thing about Churchill is his speeches in the war were recorded just upstairs from it, except he didn't do half of them because he was too drunk to actually do the speeches himself. And they got an actor in. And what if he started doing the rest of his act in the middle of going, ladies and gentlemen, I was at a Hollywood party the other day, and who should I bump into but Mr. James Cagney? Mr. Fightman of Peaches, yeah.
Audience, I think we should vote for Jeremy to extend this set with more. Because my guess is that Jeremy's just exhausted his two impressions. So who else could he meet, Jeremy?
Reverend Ian Paisley. This is not the end. It is not the beginning, but it is perhaps the beginning of the end. Or the end of the beginning, but in any way, Ulster says no.
Oh, but look, who do I see has just come in? Why, it's Donald Duck.
I could do Julian Clary. Never so much, been given by so many, it is so few.
That's Donald Sinden played at a faster speed. It's nothing like Julian Clary. I heard that actually Brian Perkins did the voice of Churchill during the war.
You do the voice of Charlotte Green, don't you? Alan, why was the primeval seabed covered by intelligent quilts?
It was highly intelligent sponges. 600 million years ago, we were trying to work out things like two club openings in bridge and, you know, taking over the world very quietly. And human beings evolved alongside them and ate them. Otherwise, these sponges would be doing the news quiz.
They are tonight.
It's a funny thing, science, isn't it, when you look at it?
It'd be a bit frustrating to be a very intelligent frond, though, wouldn't it?
Fronds, a situation comedy about six very intelligent sponges living in Manhattan.
And the awful thing is that right now, if that goes out in America, someone will be sitting there saying, it might just work.
How long ago was all this happening?
600 million years. Have you listened to the repeat? 600 million years in a day.
I think I think Jeremy can do an impression of them, actually.
They were coexisting with us 600 million years ago.
Well, they weren't coexisting, but they got on fairly well. My father telling me they never gave the shears back.
Massachusetts geology professor Mark McMenamin claimed this week that the first intelligent life forms were half plant, half animal creatures known as Ediacarans. Ediacarans? Sounds like a billiards player. The scores at the end of round three are Andy and Jeremy 12, Tony and Alan clinging to the lead with 13 points. Andy, your piece of music. Andy, why is the fog on the Tyne all his, all his?
Well, this is the sainted Gazza, who, because they've revealed that Gazza smokes 20 cigarettes a day and has been doing so for 7 or 8 years, I think.
What a girl.
Hey?
20 cigarettes a day.
And it's sort of, in a way, it's part of Gazza's charm, isn't it? Because it shows that he's not really a professional athlete, because of course he would have worked out, if he was, that the reason he only lasts 65 minutes in a match and ends up, you know, coughing his guts up on the touchline might have something to do with the fags. But he's always played Gazza, I think, like the very talented kid up the park, you know, who comes and dribbles round everybody, scores 14 goals, and then his mum comes and calls him and says he's got to come in for his dinner.
He was getting pre-match instructions from his manager that you misunderstood to go out and get the number six. And he did, and he's been smoking ever since.
Jeremy, which Welsh councillors had designs on their mayor this week?
Don't know.
I do. This is in Wales, because there was a clue in the question, because of the word Welsh. And it was a council where the mayor was a rather trendy young thing who dressed in sort of, you know, designer T-shirts and stuff, but looked like, you know, trendy scruffy. Anyway, he was given the elbow and replaced with a woman who dressed respectably in nice sort of Marks and Spencers two pieces and combed her hair.
Yes, indeed. Designer clothing wearer Armand Watts resigned his position as mayor of Chepstow this week after fellow councillors introduced a new dress code. Under the new Labour dress code, all trousers have to be loose enough to allow a rapid swing to the right. The post of mayor was rapidly filled by Mr. Watts's deputy, not because she wanted the job, but because it was the only way of stopping Geoffrey Archer from applying. Alan, which national hero shouldn't have turned a blind eye?
It's only in one paper. There's a bloke called Keynes in Cambridge, different Keynes, an old man, an old surgeon, who has come to the conclusion that Nelson had two good eyes, but he put his thumb in one of them so he could draw 200 quid a year pension from the Admiralty. And in fact, when he said, kiss me hard, he was winking with both eyes at the time.
So when he held his telescope up to his blind eye, it's because he just couldn't remember which one it was supposed to be that was blind.
It was which arm that he held it up with, because one of his arms was supposed to come off. It wasn't really, it was inside his jacket. He had a very good tailor. Good ophthalmologist and a good tailor. He had everything going for him.
And he wasn't really that tall. If you look at Nelson's column, he's standing on a plinth.
There's controversy about whether he said kiss me Hardy as well, isn't there? There is a school of thought that says what he actually said was Kismet Hardy. I don't see... That musical hadn't even been written then. So. Why would he want tickets, you know, when he's been hit by a French sniper? I don't understand.
The news that the hero of Trafalgar wasn't visually challenged after all has been followed up by further research showing that Beethoven could hear a pin drop, the stuttering Emperor Claudius was an elocution teacher, and Hitler had two after all. Before we reveal the final scores, let's hear the cuttings the teams have brought along. Andy.
Well, this cutting has been sent in anonymously, or we've lost the letter it came with. During a hearing of a case of indecency, a court in Belgium was told that before prescribing contact lenses, an optician ordered women to strip naked and dance around his consulting room while he played the accordion. His lawyer explained that the defendant had qualified in England, where this technique was commonplace.
Jeremy,
This is sent in by Mr. and Mrs. Midgley from Bishopton in Renfrewshire, and it's from the Daily Record in Scotland. They apologise for taking so long to send it in. It's actually dated Monday, December the 13th, 1993. it says, a guide dog for the blind was given his last chance yesterday after he had led his first four owners to their deaths. The Alsatian, renamed Lucky because he survived so many toe scrapes, is to be handed over to his fifth owner after intensive retraining by a German charity. Lucky's first assignment ended in tragedy when he led his owner in front of a moving bus, said the dog's new trainer, Ernst Gerber. His second owner died when Lucky led him over the edge of an unprotected seaside pier. His third died under the wheels of the Frankfurt to Cologne express train. His fourth owner died when Lucky led him across the road and into traffic. But Ernst added, basically Lucky is a damn good guide dog. He just needed to brush up on his elementary skills. Ernst said that the next owner would not be told of Lucky's past.
Tony.
This is a clipping sent in by Ted Shepherd, Thelwall, and it goes, a woman whose husband died while they were on a holiday abroad phoned Manchester Airport information desk to ask if he was still entitled to his duty-free allowance for the return flight.
Alan.
Mine's from the Bristol Evening Post, Simon. It says, a passenger who mooned from the window of a train as it pulled out of Temple Mead Station has been identified by his distinctive tattoo after a photograph of it was handed to railway police by a train spotter.
Thank you all. Now let's look at the final scores. Andy and Jeremy 16, but Tony and Alan, this week's winners, with 17 points. And before we leave you, here's an item from the Midlands Examining Group publication, which is called Replies to Comments from Teachers on GCSE Examinations. And it was sent in anonymously by a school's examination officer.
Topic 9, Sparta and the Spartan System. There was some criticism of the choice of passage for Section 2. Rump jumps were taken by both candidate and teacher to refer to something completely other than leapfrog.
That's all for this week. Till the next time, goodbye.
Taking part in the news quiz this week were Andy Hamilton, Jeremy Hardy, Tony Hawkes and Alan Corran. The chairman was Simon Hoggart and the news was read by me, Brian Perkins. The chairman's script was written by Dave Cohen and Tom Jameson with George Poles. The producer was John Rolfe.